Hi, and welcome to this episode of Security Nation, the podcast where we chat with cool people doing interesting things to advance security. I'm Jen Ellis, I'm Rapid7's VP of Community and Public Affairs, and as usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Todd Beardsley. Hey Todd, how you doing?
Hi Jen, pretty awful, but I'll pull through. I've had a cold.
You have a cold?
Yeah.
Oh.
I have the German plague or whatever.
Did you get a computer virus?
I did. No, I've got an airplane 11-hour exposure virus.
So. That's actually much worse. That's sucky. I'm sorry.
But we will soldier on, Jen.
Yeah, because we have a great episode today. We are going to be talking to Mark Gieselin. He's going to talk to us about building security champions, which is really cool. But first, we're going to talk about what's happening in security. Hooray! So what's happening in the Rapid Rundown, Todd?
For the Rapid Rundown this week, I wanted to touch on the various VPN breaches that were reported mid-October. There was some follow-up reporting on that by Lawrence Abrams of Bleeping Computer about what NordVPN in particular is doing to shore up their security after their breach. It's all sounds great. They're doing things like instituting pen tests and instituting like top to bottom code reviews and infrastructure reviews.
Wow, this sounds crazy.
I know.
Imagine.
They are basically doing the things everyone should be doing anyway all the time. But I also wanted to talk about, like, in light of these breaches, like, it's real interesting to me that, like, all, you know, there was a handful of VPNs that get breached. They're, you know, occasionally, I think we're due for a good Tor bug now. This has been a while for one.
We've only had bad ones recently.
And I just wanted to, like, I guess, muse on why people use VPNs to begin with.
Because... Oh, I sense that I'm about to get lit up in some way. So, please continue.
like VPNs have been in the news. VPN clients were famously ripped up pretty good by Orange Sai. You know, over the summer, he released a whole pile of bugs affecting a whole lot of VPNs. So if you're the sort that uses VPNs, first off, please make sure that you have updated your stuff, or ask your IT department to make sure that you've updated your stuff. Because the thing with VPNs is that I do feel like, I don't know, right? Like, I don't know if people need them as much as they used to.
I like how you're very hesitant saying that.
I am, because, like, it's really weird for security people to talk like that, right? But the fact is that...
You're going to get angry letters from security people.
I am. I'm going to...
Angry tweets.
I'm going against the security dogma of use VPNs.
Ugh, brave.
Yeah, because, like, honestly, like, today we live in a world that is largely encrypted by default. You know, the only thing left that's not encrypted that's, like, over the internet is, like, DNS, and that's starting to go away. We're talking about DNS over HTTPS these days. You know, some people have opinions about that too, but that's not this rant. But, like, when you're...
You'll save that for the next rant.
I'll save it for the next one when there's, like, a good... Something noteworthy in that happens, and I'll talk about that. But I think that, like, these days, if you're going to do any kind of, like, webby things, you're almost always on HTTPS for anything good anymore. You know, VPNs are useful for, like, work situations where you have, like, an infrastructure that has this notion of internal and external, which itself is getting a little antiquated. I mean, we all talk about zero trust, and, like, we kind of are gunning for that. You know, you should treat every network as a hostile network, you know? And so, like, I'm not super sure, like, what VPNs bring to you. So anyway, good on NordVPN for leveling up its security in the wake of their breach. But also, I don't know, think about if you need VPN at all to do the thing that you do. Because, like, what are you protecting against, really? Because this is the thing that the VPN services are selling. They sell it as, like, oh, you need this to be secure and private. And it does do that. It basically moves your privacy from one network to another. And so, as people found, like, turns out when your VPN provider gets owned, now you're super duper owned, right? And if you're opting into these kind of general virtual private networks, that not for, like, a business reason, right? Like, I have to, like, actually cross a network barrier, which is what they were originally invented for. It is the virtual private network because it implies, like, you are on a private network.
It's almost like that's what VPN stands for.
It is exactly what it stands for. But, like, you have a lot of companies now that are offering VPN services specifically so you can hide from your ISP, so you can hide from the man, you know,
right. or so you whomever. Can watch TV in the UK.
So, right. So you can skip over like region controls. And yeah. so basically for piracy. So if you're not needing it for those particular things, like the feature of VPN that puts you in another place, or the feature of VPN that puts you like in the same network as other things that you wouldn't normally be able to get to, I question the value of VPNing at all, given that, you know, most of the time you do have, you know, application layer encryption. The network is hostile all the time anyway.
So I hear what you're saying. I do have a couple of questions. I feel like this thing that you're saying about, like, you know, okay, this is good, provided like your trust that you're placing in your VPN is appropriate. And if they get owned, then like you're super owned. Like mm-hmm. you could also take out like the letters VPN and apply that to, I don't know, password manager or like any other thing. Like there are lots of these things that people make that argument for where I think we'd still be like, no, but like, yes, but the good outweighs the bad with this. Oh, yeah, you're right. And so I think, is this not like a thing that you have to consider what your risk model looks like? And yeah, it's a really important reminder to like check on the security practices of any provider or partner that you're working with.
Somebody that's providing security for sure. solutions, right? 100%. They should themselves be pretty secure.
That makes perfect sense. I agree.
I get what you're saying. I do think they're a little bit different. You know, password managers versus VPNs. I think, you know, they both are providing a solution that is squarely in security.
We
use password managers because passwords are awful and it's like the worst around and it's all we got.
Right.
Right.
What you're saying is we're doubling down on an already flawed approach in technology.
A little bit. With VPNs, though, it's like I feel like the market is super weird from like, you know, being a person who knows about security. Yeah. I have shopped VPNs before because I've had people ask me like, oh, what do you recommend? I'm like, well, I don't know. Let's take a look. Oh, look at that. Yeah. Nobody has public audits. Right. So they're all garbage. and I'm sure they're not all garbage, but it sure looks like that. Right. And so like I'm not super convinced of the security value of these private VPN companies, especially when it comes to like, what are you using them for? If it's like I use a password manager because I have to use passwords.
Right.
and I have to use hundreds of passwords.
Right.
I use a VPN because it's more of a privacy thing than a security thing almost. I don't know. Like I question the utility of VPNs in an internet where the endpoint is not like the least secure hop here, you know, like there are far more insecure hops on the internet than usually your endpoint or like the endpoint of like whatever you're going to. So
I think you know, actually VPN providers are pretty aware of this role that they play and like the level of trust and everything, and so I do think like some of the smaller or perhaps less established players are looking at how they can do sort of independent audits and that kind of stuff, which in and of itself could be challenging, right? You kind of get into that like slippery slope of sort of certification and you're only as good as your last check and like what does that mean and how do you make that work? What was it that made you particularly hit on this topic, Todd?
dear listeners, last night I was out with Jen and our colleague Harley Geiger at a bar for pub trivia. And by the way, we came in second place. We do not suck at trivia.
I will just clarify by saying that I had almost nothing to do with that, which will shock no one.
Not true in the slightest. But for whatever reason, the carriers that Harley and Jen were using just didn't have decent signal in the venue. Like they were like at no service levels of signal. Right. And I said, well, just get on the Wi-Fi. I'm on the Wi-Fi right now. Right. And they both looked at me like I was insane.
What I think is interesting about this is like at no point did the topic of VPNs come up. Mm-mm. Right. I can't speak for Harley, but I certainly don't run a VPN on my phone. I just don't also.
That's the thing. I do run a VPN on my phone. I'm pretty happy with it. But but I'm questioning like, why do I do this to begin with? Like other than like region, you know, skipping.
What was the word you used for that earlier?
A piracy? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because I'm an American. I want my American TV when I'm in Europe.
I was just saying, people were assuming that was me launching the British TV, but no, that would involve me getting a VPN, which I don't have.
So anyway, that's the... So that's the news.
That's the rapid rundown.
That's the rapid rundown on VPNs. And also, by the way, this week, as you hear this, it will be just after the 50th anniversaries of the internet.
One of the many 50th anniversaries of the internet.
Yes. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, internet. I just wanted to give like a delighted shout out to Sean Gallagher, who of Ars Technica, who wrote that correctly, that the first three letters that were transmitted over the internet were LOL, because it was supposed to be the word perfect. Login, but the first try failed at the O, and so they tried again for login again. So it was L O oops L. O-G-I-N. So, but
which is
it was
even better. It's always lol, which seems almost sort of prophetic.
Yep. Ars Technica, because it's really good.
Yeah, and Sean generally is awesome and we love him. So hi Sean, if you're listening.
Yep.
Special shout out to you. Cool. I feel like I have been appropriately run down. So now we get to meet our exciting guest, Mark Gieslin, who works at Asurion. Asurion is an insurance company focusing on technology and digital life. And Mark is the senior director of product security, and he sort of spends a lot of time thinking about how you build security into product development. Strong focus on AppSec. And when he's not doing these things, Mark is super involved in the security community around him. In the past year, he's started a local Nashville chapter of OWASP. He's also hosted a first-time security conference focused on product security called Music CityCon. I'm sure he'll happily tell us a little bit about these things. So welcome, Mark. Hi. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
You sound like a busy chap. You sound like you do a lot in the local community.
Yeah, a little too busy, but it's a ton of fun. So, yeah, with starting the conference this year was a ton of work. You know, I've never done that before, so learned a lot in the process, and we did the full blown. We wanted to do a full blown. Really first-rate security conference for Nashville, and thereby really nurture the security community here and stimulate more activity and interest in the security world. So it was a ton of work, but it was really rewarding. We had a real successful event and some interesting speakers from all around the country.
Did Taylor Swift come to your Nashville conference?
She did not. Yes.
Oh,
we tried to get her, but she just didn't have the time.
I mean, she's really good at Windows. So.
Yeah, like I hear she's big into security. Obviously, she's also a massive listener to Security Nation.
Yeah, hey, Tay.
So, So congratulations on what sounds like a really successful first year event, and congratulations on setting up the OWASP chapter as well. What do you do when you're not doing all of these cool security things, if such a thing is possible?
Yes, I have to figure out a way to sort of balance that better, but it's because I also on the side teach security from SANS Institute and that consumes a lot of time as well. So it's just my regular job and then all of the quote-unquote extracurricular activities involved in the community and the teaching. So it's pretty busy.
Yeah.
But outside of work, I'm actually trying to kind of stay away from the tech world somewhat. I'm an introvert by nature and my job requires me to be an extrovert. So when I'm not doing my job, I just love spending time with my family. I have four kids and we're very close and love music, love classical music, opera music, and reading literature and classical literature. I really love doing where I can get away with myself.
Any book recommendations you want to share?
Well, I'm a huge Dickens fan. So, I mean, I've read all of his books. I just love, particularly his later, the books that later in his career, Our Mutual Friend, and, you know, of course, the famous Tale of Two Cities. And
with the best beginning of any book ever.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, next to Neuromancer, of course.
Yeah.
What's the beginning of Neuromancer? I don't remember it.
The sky was the color of gray of a TV tuned to a dead channel. Something like that.
Oh, that is a pretty good start. I like that. That's pretty nice. Yeah, yeah. I feel like Mr. Gibson's been getting a lot of play on this podcast recently.
Yes, I'm very happy that we've balanced it with some Dickens, especially since Jen is a Dickens character, essentially.
Hey, how dare you, just because you guys call me governor. awesome. Okay, great. So, like, is Dickens himself, like, a source of personal inspiration, his characters? Who have you been inspired by in your life?
You know, when the kind of literary world moved into the realist space with George Eliot and all, Dickens was criticized a lot as being unrealistic because a lot of his characters are caricatures and fairly unrealistic. But I don't really completely agree with that. You know, they are, of course, caricatures, but they embody traits that are actually in people in real life. And you know, he was of course trying to be funny with a lot of that. So I just find myself quite often just laughing out loud when I'm reading him. So it's comic relief, but he also almost every one of his novels has a twist to it. So it's somewhat of a mystery.
An Oliver Twist?
Yes. So there's always some surprise, and that was sort of one of the things he did. So they're almost mystery novels in that sense, which is fun. So I would always recommend read the books before you watch any movies. Oh, otherwise, sure. it'll all be spoiled, right?
Yeah.
His books generally end with a happy ending, so they're fairly cheerful. Cheerful books, even though they may entail a great deal of suffering throughout the story. So in a sense of inspiration in terms of just for life, yes, I'd say he's provided that.
Awesome. I love it. Okay. It's nice to get to talk about something that's not just security. But we should probably get back to the security stuff. It sounds like you've been a huge champion for embedding security into development practices, looking at how you can amplify and build better secure by design. These are all things that we're like huge fans of. And so very excited to talk to people who are doing work in this area. And I believe one of the ways that you've done this has been to sort of build a security champions program. That's not what you call it though, is it?
No, I decided to call it something that would be a little cooler, if you will, and be a little different from the rest of the world. So we call them security mavens. Nice. And the word maven just means really expert. So it's, we call them that. Sound it cooler than security.
I mean, it does sound like what Dickens would call an expert. Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. So tell us about the program. What does it entail?
So it is, it's not rocket science. We're not doing anything particularly revolutionary. It is in essence a security champions program, but we made some fairly minor, but I think really significant tweaks to what has typically been done with security champions programs that has made it widely successful at Asurion. And the main, I think, difference is just a matter of philosophy and focus. And most security champion programs, and I've done those at Intuit, and I've done that as a Citrix before coming to Asurion, but most of them, what they try to do, right, is to build up a certain level of expertise in development engineers. Well, they'll select or appoint engineers in the development world that are going to basically be deputized as kind of security light in a sense. You'll give them some training. They'll be the evangelists and the contact points for the security organization into that world. And they'll help you extend the security org, if you will, out into that world. But rather than us making them these deputies of security or an extension of security, security light, if you will, what our focus was really to make them into AppSec security experts in their own right. And so that they could honestly, I mean, essentially take ownership of security within their product teams and do it competently with adequate training. So what we've done is we've invested heavily in training them rather extensively in security, and in some ways they get more security training than our centralized security organization even.
Wow.
But the focal point was to build these individuals into application security experts, and that they could go on and carry the torch independently, if you will, from the centralized security organization.
Cool. So to make sure that I understand this, so the program is for developers working at Asurion on applications, on developing applications, and they are brought into the Security Maven program. They're given training specifically on AppSec elements and best practices. Is that right?
Yeah, that's essentially it. We start them on with a good foundation of application security, but we don't limit them to that. We let them, as long as they are actually engaged with the program and having influence and impact and being successful at it, we let them expand beyond that.
Cool.
So we'll train them on both offensive and defensive. Part of the basic training is offensive and defensive. So not only do they know how to defend against the attacks, but they know how to attack the systems as well, which is of course always a lot more fun. So they love that time. So, and then we let them, after they've gone through all the basic stuff, of course, we coach them. I coach them, mentor them, and kind of the direction to go. But a number of them have just decided to really specialize in offensive security. Some have gone more of a management security direction. Some are just purely on the defense side. Some go and specialize in mobile security, for instance, or whatever it may be. And we support them. We fund it fully for them, both their training, their travel, take them off to conferences. We go to DEF CON every year. We go to OWASP conferences as well. Just what you would do with if you were in the security world and you were very engaged in the security world, how would you participate in that community? We want them to participate fully in the same way.
So wait, that was a lot of categories. How many people are actually in this program?
Well, we started out with 12 3 years ago, and we weren't actually sure how well this was going to work out because, you know, I'd never done anything quite this ambitious with a Security Champions program. But we sold it from the top down, from the starting with the president of the company, got him to buy into it, and then we just went down from there through the product development organization. And then once we got all their buy-in, we launched a pretty substantial internal marketing campaign to make it appealing and to get folks excited about it. And then we had them apply to the program. And that's one of the key differences from what I've done in the past. We didn't have people appointed to be in the program. We had them apply. And then we interviewed them, made sure they were qualified, they had the right mental mind. The mindset is the key piece, because they didn't have any security experience at that point. So it was really, did they have the aptitude right to really succeed as a security engineer? And at this point, we've got well over 50
wow
members scattered globally and like six nations and all across the U.S. as well.
So just for scale, like that's 50 out of like roughly how many like tech engineer developer folks do you think you have in your organization? Like, is this 10%? Is this 1%? Like, that's what I'm.
It's more than 1%, but it's about 4% of the total engineering population. The thing is, it just keeps growing, and the leaders of the company have loved it. The development leaders have loved it. It's had all kinds of benefits that are not necessarily our initial focus, but have ended up, it's a great retention program because people love it so much.
Yeah.
Some of these folks have gone on to be very successful in the field. One of our inaugural group of 12 is Omer Levy-Hivrani. He's based in Tel Aviv, works in, it's not really a subsidiary technically, but they use a different name than Assyrian. Uh-huh. They use the name Saludo. Okay. And it is part of the Assyrian company. And he actually has gone off to become pretty well known in his own right. He speaks regularly at security conferences. And he has actually authored and open sourced a secrets management tool called Camus, K-A-M-U-S, for Kubernetes, which has been embraced by Google. Even.
Yeah. So Kubernetes is so hot right now.
It is. I was going to say that. in right now.
Yeah. So it's cool. It's awesome. 3 years ago, he didn't have any security knowledge, essentially, and wasn't sure if he really wanted to do this. And now he's loving it. I've had a number of them have told me this is the best career choice they ever made, is joining the program.
I mean, that's going to feel really good, right? That's going to make you feel
it
really
is, great. It does. Yeah, it's been the most difficult job I've done in terms of the amount of work overall working here. But it's been the most satisfying because we've honestly, this term is thrown around a lot, but we've honestly transformed the culture of the product development organization, where security, I'm not just saying this, I'm like amazed how widely the impact has been felt, and that they truly do put security now at the same level as features. So they recognize security as an integral part of what we do. And it's not like they were before were just, against security, of course. It's just that security was like, yes, that's something we have to do. But we don't really own it. The security organization owns it and we need to get their approval, et cetera, et cetera. But with the whole move to the DevOps culture, you need to embed security expertise, at least to some degree, in those DevOps teams.
Could not agree more.
And so they can take full ownership of it. That's crucial. And so they can move quickly. And that's what we've done here. And in the process, they've actually see on their own right, without us having to persuade them, how important security is. And they're doing stuff that we could have never done on our own from a centralized organization.
I think this is an incredibly powerful story, and I like really take my hat off to you guys and what you've achieved with it. It sounds like one of the things you benefited from is that you early on got good support from leadership, and that they themselves are very switched on to the importance and role of security, which is great. And congratulations on that. I'm sure that, you played a huge role in getting them there. And congratulations to your leadership on that, because I think like that's very forward leaning that they have that point of view. What have been some of the challenges that you faced?
Yes. So a lot of them we headed off, I think, with good planning initially, which again was somewhat experimental. So we weren't sure how it was going to play out, but it played out very well, because I've done this before, like I mentioned, in other companies. And one of the problems you'll typically face is maintaining momentum. You'll start out fine. You'll get some folks appointed to the program. And what will happen is the momentum won't keep there. You won't keep their interest. And it'll kind of degenerate over time, and where you're constantly having to reach out to them and pull them in and drive still from central org. And that's not what we want it to do. We want it to be self-driving. And but we headed that off proactively by a couple of things. One was, again, the application, apply, don't appoint folks. The other one was fund it centrally so that their orgs don't have to pay anything. So they've never have an excuse of saying, hey, we got tight budgets, we can't send them to that conference, or we can't send them to that training. We're funding it for them. So it actually looks like, hey, security is helping us out here because they're actually giving us free training, right? Mm-hmm. And so just keeping it fun. And because engineers love to continue to learn, so they're voracious learners. And if you show them the real fascination of this tech security from a tech side, they will embrace it by and large. And if you keep it fun and exciting and interesting, they'll continue to be engaged. So one of the other key things we did is focus on security, not compliance. And then focus on education and not on enforcement. So we don't task these people and say, you're now the enforcers, you're now the policemen in your groups. We just tell them, you are the security resident expert, and you need to influence your peers with that.
Right. Yeah, you turn them into like teachers and mentors, not like cops.
Yep.
And executioners.
Yeah, exactly. But we did naturally wasn't perfect, and we did face some challenges. And one of the challenges, the way I would put it is you can get the excessively self-focused engineer.
Wait, what?
I don't know what you're talking about. I have never.
So really what they're interested in is their own world.
And you mean there's a downside for hiring like quote rock stars and quote ninjas and all these other very solitary quotes as engineers?
Yeah. So, but to really have impact, right? You've got to be an influencer. You have to go beyond, beyond yourself. So we knew that was an attribute we would require of the members to want to accept them. But still, you can't gauge that perfectly, you know, not knowing these people. So that was one of the course corrections we have to make. But we built in a way to do that. We told them, like, this is a 2-year assignment. And after 2 years, we basically can move you out of the program if you're not doing super well. And you can voluntarily leave if you go, I've done my time and I really don't want to do this anymore. So we built that in. And we also require them to pass certain exams and retain certain certifications. And if they weren't achieving those, then, you know, the predefined agreement was that they would move out of the program as well. So, and we made it clear they need to be influencers. They need to have impact. They need to be doing lunch and learns or web their own internal webcast or whatever it is, so they continue to educate and influence and impact. And vast majority of them have done extremely well. I'd say, you know, 80%+ of them have done extremely well. But there have been some that we've had to, you know, remove from the program just because it wasn't working out. So that's been one of the challenges.
But it sounds like you've done a really good job of managing expectations going into it and like very clearly laying out expectations. So when you have removed people from the program, has there been blowback on that?
Yeah, they've been understanding. And we've worked hard not to shame anybody or anything like that. And we work with their management. So it's fairly graceful exit. We've made a path for graceful exit of the program, where they won't embarrass them, and at the same time we don't have to continue the relationship. So, and their management universally have understood when we've had to do that and supported it, and they've actually grown an understanding of the program as it's continued on over the course of the last 3 years, and appreciated more what we're trying to do, and they've bought into it more. And so what's happened generally is they've actually come back with recommendations of other people in their team that were more suitable. And then when we've gone through the interview process and all, and made sure that they were doing this because they wanted to and not because their manager asked them to, we've been able to correct the situations pretty well.
It sounds like an absolutely fantastic program, Mark. Congratulations on it. It really does sound like it's been hugely impactful at Asurion and for the individuals involved. And I'm sure that lots of other people could emulate your example. As a very last question, for somebody else who did want to emulate this, what would be the number one thing that you would tell them?
Well, you hinted at it initially, which is you do have to get executive support first. Yeah. So you would work hard and put the time in to sell the program to the executives first, and sell it not as just a security program, but as a program with broader implications for the company, for the advancement of the company's reputation, for employee retention, as a means of achieving the security that the company needs anyway, but also having all these side benefits from it as well. So I'd work hard on planning that and selling that first and getting their buy-in on that it's going to be funded from the security organization. That's critical. either funded from the security organization or some central org, so that the burden is not placed on the member engineers in their organizations, because otherwise you'll have a hard time keeping the momentum behind it.
That's great. That's great advice. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us. I hope that you will come back at some point in the future and talk to us more about the exciting stuff you're working on. As ever, thank you to my co-host, Todd Beardsley, and thank you to our amazing producer, Bree, who makes everything actually happen.
Thanks, Bree. You're the best.
Until next episode, have a fab time.